This special podcast is part of GWEC's Global Wind Report 2024 launch. GWEC's Global Wind Report is the definitive analysis of the wind industry, containing a full status update of the market and a forecast for the rest of the decade. There's also a policy deep dive with in-depth insight from GWEC's team of industry experts analysing the current challenges facing the wind sector, as well as our largest ever Markets to Watch section. Find the report at gwec.net.
Hello listeners, Stuart Mullen here, Chief Operating Officer of the Global Wind Energy Council, and today I have the pleasure of bringing you a very special podcast in relating to the launch of GWEC's Global Wind Report for 2024, which is sponsored by Sungrow. And on the line from Sungrow, we have Mr. Peng, who is the VP of the Sungrow Group. He is the chairman of Sungrow Hydrogen, and he heads up Sungrow's Wind. Mr. Peng, can you tell us a little bit about Sungrow for those that don't know much about the company?
Thank you for inviting us to join today's podcast. And congratulations to release GWEC Global Wind Power Annual Report. Sungrow is very willing to participate in such activities. Sungrow Power established in 1997 as a key high-tech enterprise in China, has been concentrating on the field of new energy power generation. Our company specializes in R&D, production, sales and service of new energy equipment, including wind energy, solar energy, energy storage, EV driver, and hydrogen energy. By 2023, Sungrow's cumulative installed capacity has exceeded 500 gigawatts. One international reputation and presence over 170 countries and regions. The company has achieved multiple important awards and plays a significant role in renewable energy industry.
Thank you. Thanks very much for that wonderful overview about what the breadth of Sungrow's operation. It's fascinating to get that insight into Sungrow. Thank you very much, Mr. Peng, for that introduction to the Sungrow organization. And to give the audience a little bit of a taste of the Global Wind Report, or to digest some of the key findings for the Global Wind Report this year, we have from GWEC the head of policy, Ms. Joyce Lee, and also the head of market intel and strategy, Mr. Feng Zhao, who will give a bit of an intro. Feng and Joyce, I'll hand over to you.
Thank you so much, Stuart. And it's a pleasure to be here and join Sungrow and yourself for this vaunted podcast for the wind sector. So I thought I would start with giving a bit of a sense of the theme of the report, and then I'll hand it to Feng to share a few of the headline numbers, which are quite exciting. Coming out of the industry. And it's a very momentous time for us, because this Global Wind Report is the global wind industry's set piece statement for the year, where we look back on all our progress from the year prior, 2023, and then we start to look ahead at our growth opportunities and prospects for the short and medium term. When we were thinking about the theme of this report, we thought, what better way to create a kind of sense of a launch pad for growth than leveraging the COP28 historic milestone that was reached in December last year, where nearly 200 governments came together at COP to agree on a global goal to triple renewable energy capacity, as well as double annual energy efficiency improvements by 2030. And this goal was part of the outcome of the global stocktake process, and enshrined in the cover decision of COP28, but it was also part of a voluntary sideline pledge that was signed up by 132 governments in the end, with even more specificity around the key enablers like permitting and unlocking grids to reach that goal. So this is our central theme for the report, and we try to do three things around this theme. On the one hand, we take four domain areas of the industry, and those are investments, supply chains, grids and system infrastructure, as well as public support and a socioeconomic consensus around the transition agenda. And we test each of these areas in terms of how we're tracking if we want to scale up wind growth to reach the tripling goal. Not because these are going to be the only areas which determine our success, but because these areas, in our view, are particularly critical for mitigating the risks of an unstable and disorderly transition. So how we act in each of these four areas will matter if we want to have a just transition. The second thing that we do is we look at the current technological era that we're in. So how is the supply chain being impacted by this rapid innovation cycle, this turbine platform growth, automation, AI, robotics? We look at the impact of disinformation and misinformation on public support for wind expansion. And we also look at the digitalization gap between the global north and south, and how this impacts the ability to not just site projects and deliver projects, but also integrate large-scale renewables in the future. And then finally, we show that there is a complex story when it comes to wind's growth and scaling up to meet the tripling goal by 2030. We show an S-curve graph and how the industry right now is in the belt of the S-curve, and we're facing both upward and downward pressures to ascend the curve and scale up our annual installations to the 320 gigawatt mark by 2030, which is what's required for a 1.5C pathway. So we're facing, as an industry, many positive tailwinds, but equally several concerning headwinds in terms of growth. And maybe that's something we can dig into a little bit further in this conversation. But for now, I'll hand it to Feng to share a bit of the data side of the report.
All right. Thank you, Joyce. Yeah, I think 2023, that's absolutely a fascinating year for the wind industry. The key numbers from this report reveal that last year was the best year for the wind industry. Globally, we have 117 gigawatt of new wind power capacity added into the power grid. That's a 50% growth compared with 2022. This spring, the total global wind turbine installation crossed the 1 terawatt milestone, the mark. So for onshore wind, that's also the record. That's the first year global onshore wind achieved more than 100 gigawatt of new installation. Looking at the offshore, even though it's not the best year, but we still have nearly 11 gigawatt installed across the global. This is 24% higher than the previous year, making 2023 the second highest year for the industry. Even though we had a good year, more than 110 gigawatt installed, but looking at this, the distribution of the new installation across global, it's uneven. Looking at the installation per region, for example, APAC region continued to meet the growth with more than 71% of the growth, followed by Europe and North America. If we're looking at the installation per country, absolutely, we see this imbalanced installation as well. For example, China, as a market leader, made up 65% of the installation. So if we're looking at the top 10 market, those 10 market made up 88% of the installation. So again, I think to achieve the energy transition, we do need, countries outside of the top 10 and to join this race and make sure that we have enough renewable, specifically wind installed to meet the target. Looking at the market outlook for the next 5 years, we believe that the momentum, for the current growth momentum, are going to continue. On average, for the next 5 years, in 2024 and 2028, we're going to have, on average, 58 gigawatt new capacity to be built year after year. So that means the wind industry will continue to experience the record growth in the next 5 years. Even though we increase our forecast compared with our previous year's outlook, but the upgrade rate of wind growth is still not repeated enough to enable the world to achieve the Paris Agreement. So we're still behind the target required to achieve the IEA net zero pathway. To get there, I think the industry need to continue to working with the government, both in global north and specifically in global south, to accelerate the energy transition. We need to continue to make the progress for supply chain, permitting, financing, grid, etc. So we're looking forward to see the industry continue to pick up the momentum moving forward. So that's a kind of key summary for this report. I'm going to stop here. Back to you,
Stuart. Yeah, thanks, Feng, and thanks, Joyce. And I think that there's a lot to unpack in that short presentation. And I know the Global Wind Report tends to set the tone for the conversation for the industry for the next year. So, I mean, I think that, Feng, the last report that highlighted the supply chain shortages really hit the mark and came at exactly the right time, and it's helped industry have a laser-like focus on some of these issues. So I hope that this year's report does the same thing. But now I would like to bring in Mr. Lin from Sungrow also, who's the overseas marketing director. Mr. Lin, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, so hi, Joaquin. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you too. So we've just heard from Feng that this year was the best year ever for wind. Do you see this in Sungrow? Are you feeling what a wonderful year 2023 was?
Yes, for sure. Yeah, actually, we share the same how say excitement with your report. And just before we have a further discussion, I think I just show you some exciting numbers. You know, last year is also the best year for Sungrow. We delivered the wind converter, 32 gigawatt, to the market. And also, we are very proud of deciding to share another big milestone. Actually, this week, we just celebrate our cumulative 100 gigawatt wind converter global shipment. So it's also, as I say, it's very big and exciting for Sungrow Wind.
Yeah, that's amazing. 100 gigawatts of converters and 32 gigawatts, you said, last year?
Yes. In a single year.
That's amazing. That's I think the figures that Feng mentioned were around about 109 gigawatts installed. Is that right, Feng? 109, 110 gigawatts installed last year?
Globally, yeah. We have 117 gigawatt,
117 gigawatts
offshore, but still, that's a big part of the pie. Yes. Congratulations, Ning.
That's an amazing market share for Sungrow. So, Mr. Lee, how does Sungrow? I mean, if you oversee if you're overseeing the overseas marketing, how do you market Sungrow, and how do you interact with customers in various markets?
Yeah, honestly, although we got this such high wholesale volume last year, but actually right now our wholesale dominant market is still in China. And right. This is why we reach to Jirak, we may rely on your network to expand to other countries. Right now we are working on, yeah.
Okay, and what other countries are you focusing on?
Basically it's in like Europe and America. You know, we are the supplier to wind turbines. So basically, we focus on the customer like GE, Vestas, and Siemens Gamesa, something like this, yeah.
And as the largest converter supplier in the global wind industry, could you share a little bit about your experience about building a flexible supply chain?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's a... there's a lot I can say, but I just try to highlight a few things. You can imagine that first, we have a such huge, how say, delivery target every year. And it's a big, how say, value for us. We can use this number, this volume, to leverage with our suppliers. So you talk about flex or supply chain. You can say that we can leverage this by some key suppliers, for example, like IGBT supplier or something. This is critical component, especially in some big year. So everybody try to secure this, how say, supply from the supplier. And we, because we have this, how say, large demand, then we can sign some strategy agreement with key supplier to make sure we have a stable price, even in big year, and also help us to control the lead time for our production. Yeah. This is the first thing I want to highlight to you.
Yeah, sure. Can I ask you, you said that, I think you mentioned that the bulk of your market was still supplying to the Chinese domestic market. The feed-in tariffs, et cetera, subside in China, do you expect the Chinese market to contract a lot? Is this why you're looking to get into other markets, or is this part of a new, how do you read the market situation and the market development both in China and globally?
Yeah, I think for the wind industry, it's kind of, to compare with like auto industry, it's kind of, I would use the word weird, you know, it's like China and the other countries, the other regions. So yeah. Basically, for SunGrow, because we already very successful in PV and energy storage, yeah. We have about 50% of international revenue, and for wow. SunGrow Wind, this is the trend we are going to do. That we need to expand more outside China market orders to have to make our business more healthy. Because we know in China, you know, recently the price competition is quite strong. Every year, the OEMs need all whole supply chain to do some cost reduction. I think for us, it's a long-term, healthy business. It's more like you have a stable order, stable price, and everybody grows in a very healthy way. So this is a reason I think we are looking for the international market. More than China. China is like our base to secure the all the operation and production. But in future, if for the long-term business development, I think the international market is more important for us.
Yeah, I guess that goes to the whole industrialization and being able to bring scale into the market. But I think that also when we've looked at the last couple of years, I think that and Fong, you're much better on the data and statistics than I am. But I think if I remember roughly 2 years ago, we were about 100 and just over 100 gigawatts of installed. Then we dropped down to like 70 or 80 gigawatts last year, and now we're up to 117. This sort of up and down, and I know that the Global Wind Report predicts a smoother trajectory as we move forward, but still not enough, I understand, Fong, still not enough to reach to curtail the 1.5 degree, so we still need to do more. But it looks like the way that we're predicting the market is a steady growth now. But can you tell me what impact sort of like booms and bust cycles in a market, like up and down cycles, have on a company like SunGrow? How do you plan your production in such a volatile, or what has been a volatile up and down trajectory for wind in the past?
I think first thing that we have reserved a big production capacity. Actually, for SunGrow Wind, we have 80 gigawatt total annual production capacity. So this is allow us to adapt to the market demand very frequently, even in the up and down years, you know. So this is also providing us very strong capacity to controlling the cost and also faster response to some, especially large scale orders or projects. Yeah.
Interesting. And so, as I mentioned, and as both Fong and Joyce pointed out, that we need to do a lot more wind. And so, if we've agreed as a global as a globe that we need to triple the renewables in order to achieve zero carbon. As a leading supplier, do you think it's a do you think this tripling goal is achievable?
Sure, for sure. I think we strongly believe that the tripling the global wind energy installation by 2030 is achievable. Yeah, because for some group, we already set some clear, how say, revenue target. I'll just give you a few numbers. In 2022, our revenue, group revenue is 40 billion RMB, but last year we up to 70 billion. And right now, our target for 2030 is kind of 300 billion. So we have a strong belief in the global new energy market growth. So that's the reason we also set our ambitions in 2030. So one word, yes, we believe tripling is achievable for everybody if everybody sit down together and try to cooperate. Yeah.
So as a Chinese company that's going out into the rest of the world, how are you dealing with the question of resistance from other parts of the world to Chinese manufacturing?
Yeah. Good question. I think recently we all see the news that the EU launched the anti-dumping investigation against the Chinese OEM. I think everybody is concerned about this. It's bring us a few, I would say, the uncertainty in the future business. But in our side, I think for Sungrow, we are always believe there is a way to find a win-win solution for each party. Sungrow Wind, as you say, is a leading company in the wind converter in the global wind market. But we are not, actually, we are not intending to disrupt the global supply chain. We are in opposite. We are trying to integrate and contribute to global wind supply chain. Yeah, I think we will be kind of a good partner instead of a straight and to like a foreign, like EU supply chain or even US. Because, you know, during the last year, I have a few visits to Western countries or customers. I always tell them one thing, that we are not your competitors or threatened to your market. We are kind of a partner. We should find a way to sit together to have a win-win solution. Yeah, basically, this is what we are going to do. And I believe a lot of other Chinese companies share the same value to it.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, that clearly the partnership model is what everyone hopes for. I mean, I think that the Global Wind Energy Council worked with the Boston Consulting Group last year to create a report around supply chain, and we'll put a link to that report also in the show notes for this podcast. But in that report, it sort of outlined four different scenarios for achieving this the growth that we need for net zero, and really the only viable solution is collaboration and working together on all of these things. So it's great to hear that Sungrow is taking a partnership approach. It's also quite interesting to hear that there is concern from the Chinese manufacturers around the recent investigations announced by the EU into the Chinese companies coming into Europe. So it's pretty interesting. Maybe if I can bring Fong and Joyce back into the conversation now, and we can have a bit of a chat in relation to how GWIC, and particularly Fong, maybe if you can provide some of the data in relation to how we see Sungrow and the converter market, what's happening in that from a market perspective.
So as you mentioned, Stuart, last year we did the cooperate with the BCG, Longsys Global Wind Supply Chain Deep Dive Report. That report, we also had a close look at the wind turbine power converter supply chain. So in general, I think follow the other, you know, components, we see there is a growth, tremendous growth up to 2030. But looking at the supply chain right now, we do see, you know, not enough capacity, at least outside of China. In general, we don't see a big challenge. As Ming mentioned, they have the tremendous annual production capacity. But outside of China specifically, for example, in markets like in Europe and US, specifically in the US right now under this IRA, Inflation Reduction Act, where we need the company to have this local production capacity, local content requirement to meet this secure this bonus. So again, I think to get the global market capacity available to achieve the target, we do the investment in market where we do have this requirement, and also specifically in global sales. To get there, I guess Ling already shared his experience, how they can quickly wrap up the capacity and also be flexible. It would be great that, company like SunGrow, they can also, building their business outside of China to support the global growth through either, technology transfer, etc. That's how we can, make sure that countries across the global benefit from the energy transition. So in general, I think for the wind power converter supply chain, we do have the enough capacity for now, but again, to meet this 320 gigawatt annual installation by 2030, that's the capacity required to meet 1.5 pathway Paris Agreement.
Yeah,
we do need a further investment.
So, Mr. Lin, it seems like that you, with 80 gigawatts, that's capacity. That's a lot of capacity each year, but it's still a long way up to the 320 gigawatts of annual installation. Can I ask you, one of the things that often is asked, actually around all manufacturers, is how do you take responsibility for sourcing components for your products? What are some of the safeguards you put in place to making sure that your sub-suppliers are compliant with ESG regulations?
Yeah, I think first, for wind converter, it's kind of, to compare with a turbine, I think it's kind of a simple component, but we identify some critical ones, like especially in 2 years ago, it's a lot of shortage everywhere, like IGBT or some electric small parts. And basically, as I mentioned before, we signed a strategy agreement, because every year, by end of the year, we will get some forecast from all the OEMs for next year installation. And we will do some our optimized demand forecast, and to secure the key component storage by under the agreement. This is the first thing. And the second thing is that since we already have enough experience, so we do the R&D design for the converter. It's a kind of a platform design. We're going to share some key component between different platforms. So this is the two way we do it.
And I think anyone that has listened to any of the podcasts that I'm on before, that but they would know my background is with the turbine manufacturers. And I have to ask, particularly around offshore turbines now we're getting into a bit of a nerdy subject. So we haven't spoken about this, but and maybe it's not that relevant, but I do have a sort of a technical nerdy question. When a turbine manufacturer is deciding to either, in particularly one of these new wind turbines, one of the bigger wind turbines where they've got the space, if a turbine manufacturer is looking at having a converter either in the nacelle or in the bottom of the tower, does SunGrow have a perspective about where is the best place for a converter? Is it down the bottom of the tower or is it up the top of the nacelle?
Yeah. Actually, we can suggest in the nacelle or the tower bottom, which one is better. But basically, the turbine OEMs, they will dominate in the design. They will say, okay, we prefer, for example, our past existing platform used the nacelle-based converter. So probably for next one, we keep this. But we do see some OEMs trying to, how say, be more flexible. They will listen to us, listen to our experience. We will show you, okay, which one is better from technology and also from the cost perspective. I think things already have some change.
Yeah, and I mean, a converter is one of those things that nobody sees. Well, the service technicians and the installation technicians see it, and it has such a key component. But because it's not, because it's an internal component, and no one really sees it, so it doesn't really get spoken about in the same manner of like the blades and the cells, etc. But no, anyway, yeah. I just was really interested in that particular point, because I know that there are different strategies about where the best place for a converter is, and I was wondering, as the converter experts, whether you have an opinion one way or the other. But it sounds like you're, again, open to partnership and collaboration, and you're prepared to come with your advice. But
I would say the cooperation to this kind of discussion is okay for us. But the most difficult thing is about lead time. I need to highlight here. So in China, you know, we always talk about speed. You know, I just give you one small case. In 2 years ago, we have a very urgent project. It's more than 500 megawatt offshore.
Yep.
And the OEM told us that, okay, we just signed it. We need to deliver it by end of the year. That means the lead time is only remain 3 months.
Yeah.
And you can imagine start from R&D to mass delivery, only 3 months.
Wow.
But this is the most difficult for us. It happened a lot in China.
Actually, is there anything like any major developments in the converter market? I mean, because it seems like the converter is kind of like a stable product, or at least as much as I know about the converters. Is there constant innovation, or are we?
No. I would say in Europe, the converter is kind of a stable. But in China, you always see the news. Okay, today we are number one, 12 megawatt. Next month, we are number one, 30 megawatts. And maybe a few months later, 80 megawatts. You can imagine that we are always need to develop a new product. It's not always stable, you know?
Yeah. Okay. But so how do you guys keep up with the innovation, or how do you track innovation? Because I presume that, like most people, if you're going to invest in new technology, you have to get a return on that investment. How do you make sure that that there's enough volume in the market to support the new investment for you?
Yeah, one good thing is that for Sungrow Group, we are always focused on the energy transition.
Yeah.
That means we have some shared R&D experience between different different business, like from PV or energy storage. This is the first thing. A second thing is that since Chinese market is developed so fast, so we always, every year, we will do some design for some new turbine. For example, last year, we say, okay, maybe in 2024, the offshore turbine will up to 20. So we do some pre-designs to reserve this technology and platform for the market.
Yeah. I guess that means that you are very much in partnership with the turbine manufacturers and the OEMs of the world to make sure that the products that you're developing actually have a long shelf life, and that you can actually get some volume into the market. But as we said, I mean, as Fong pointed out, that there's so much work that needs to be done ahead of us, that it's going to be a heavy lift. We are almost out of time for the podcast, and so Mr. Lin, I was wondering, from your perspective, if you have any closing remarks about what do you think are going to be the biggest challenges on the road ahead for you guys, and what are you looking forward to most in the next couple of years?
I think the most difficult thing for me, for you, if I speed out, you think it's quite simple. You know, the big question for us is that we need to let like Western players, OEMs, know Sungrow Wind.
Yeah,
it's a simple one, but you know, in start from last year, I participated a lot of exhibitions in Europe. when I introduce Sungrow, they always say, okay, we know Sungrow about the PV, but nobody knows Sungrow also provides a wind converter and such huge delivery each year. So this is the first challenge for me. And the second one, I think that for Sungrow, since we already have some shared international experience from PV and other business, I think we are capable for all kinds of cooperation with like the Western OEMs. It's just a matter of time. But the first thing we need, more and more people know us. Yeah.
So just on that, to get the awareness of your products out, do you participate in major events like Wind Europe or Wind Energy Hamburg or ACP in the Americas or Brazil Wind Power?
Yeah, this year is our first year to have booths in the Western countries in Hamburg, September. Yeah. We were going to present us there. And I think the start from this year is just beginning. So next year, as you mentioned, to US and even some new market like India, we are going to present us more. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Well, hopefully that people coming to Hamburg can get along. Actually, what about in the APAC area? GWIC is having an APAC summit in Incheon. Do you have much, I know, of course, excluding the Chinese market, but what about other parts of the APAC area like Australia, South Korea, India?
Yeah. Actually, this November, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We have in Korea, we were also joined. But for me, is that in Asian markets, because you can foresee that all the players still from Western countries, like Korea, Japan from GE or Vestas. So for us, our focus is still in Europe. That's for sure. Yeah. And for the market, if we enter the supply chain of these OEMs, and we will try to contact some local developer, that's the next step for us. But also, yeah, you're right. We will present us to let everybody know, okay, we are here. You can find us anywhere, anytime.
Great. Look, thank you very much, Mr. Lin, and thank you very much, Mr. Peng, for joining us on the podcast today. And thank you, Joyce and Fong, for providing some background for the Global Wind Energy Report. If you haven't downloaded the Global Wind Energy Report, if you haven't downloaded the Global Wind Report, please do so now. Stop the podcast and go and click on the link and download the report. It is a very fascinating read. It's got, as Joyce mentioned, it deals with a range of issues that we are facing as a industry. And Fong has deep dives into all of the data you could possibly want to look for. So a huge thanks to Sungrow for sponsoring the podcast today and being part of the Global Wind Report. And we wish you well in your entry into Europe, Lin, and the whole Sungrow team.
Yeah, thank you. It's my pleasure. And looking for our next meeting, maybe, or maybe next exhibition together. Yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.